Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
2 years ago, Boko Haram kidnapped more than 200 schoolgirls from Chibok, northeastern Nigeria. For the parents of these girls, the nightmare continues.
I lost hope when I heard about the abduction. I cannot imagine seeing my daughter once again.
And Malawi's President Peter Mutharika declares a state of national disaster over the prolonged drought.
These prolonged dry spells have resulted into severe crop failure, particularly in the southern region and parts of the central region.
Plus, the troubled Darfur region of Sudan wraps up a referendum on whether or not to unite its 5 states into a single one. Hello and thanks for tuning to Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn.
Top story.
Proof of life. A video aired by CNN, apparently filmed in December last year, appears to show some of the missing Chibok girls alive. A number of parents of the girls who saw the video recognized their daughters. This comes 2 years after Boko Haram Islamist gunmen kidnapped more than 200 girls from a Chibok secondary school in northeastern Nigeria. While some of them escaped, 219 others are still missing. Katrin Gensler met some of the traumatized parents who had gathered in Chibok, and her report is now presented by Eunice Wanjiru.
We thank you for counting us among the living these days. We thank you, Father, for bringing us into Chibok without any problem on our way.
Scores of women and men are gathered under a huge tree to offer a communal prayer in Chibok village. It is a historic and sad moment because this is the first time that parents of the more than 200 schoolgirls have gathered together in Chibok since their children were abducted 2 years ago. On the night of April 14 to 15, 2014, heavily armed Boko Haram gunmen stormed the dormitories of Chibok Girls' School. Most of the girls at the time were aged between 16 to 18 years. There has been no word or sign of around 200 of these hostage girls. One of them is Saraya Stover. Her mother, Monica, says she is slowly accepting the unimaginable.
I lost hope when I heard about the abduction. I cannot imagine seeing my daughter once again.
Monica Stover is not only losing hope about meeting her daughter, but she says she has also lost confidence with the government.
No one has talked to us. We only hear stories in the news. But for us parents who live in Chibok, there is nothing. Just a few people like the ones working with the Murtala Mohammed Foundation. But from the government, nothing.
The Murtala Mohammed Foundation is the one that made the memorial get-together for Chibok parents possible. Aisha Mohammed Oyebode, daughter of the 1976 assassinated military ruler Murtala Mohammed, is head of the foundation.
We're going to work hard to see how we can, you know, continue to put pressure on our daughters being found, but also to look at how we can make sure that all the younger children go back to school. I've told them that rebuilding this school is an important symbol.
Chibok Girls Secondary School now resembles a haunted building. The roof is missing and the walls are a stark reminder of what happened here. But the abduction could have been prevented, says Yakubu Nkeki, a representative of the parents.
These girls, as they are here, they were here.
Not any single security watch over here by that time. They are living lonely here without any security. By that time, we have only 15 army looking over Chibok. And we know that these terrorists that are so troubled that 15 army will not engage them. And this army, they are living there around Secretariat area.
As for Monica Stover, the mother of one of the missing girls, it does not mean much whether people remember the second year since her daughter was forcefully snatched from her. What matters is that she and the rest of kidnapped Chibok girls are returned.
And that report was written by Katrin Gensler. Following the Chibok abduction and several other kidnapping of young children, the Nigerian government under then-President Goodluck Jonathan initiated a program known as Safe Schools. It is partly being sponsored by the United Nations. One of DW's West Africa correspondents, Adrian Chris, has just returned from Chibok, and Mark Caldwell asked him whether safety in schools had improved.
Well, there was a Safe School initiative that was announced a long time ago with a lot of donors coming into that initiative. But if you go on the ground, you rarely see anything. There are some schools, I have to admit, that were set up in the IDP camps where a lot of Nigerian refugees and internally displaced people live. But let's talk about the Chibok school, for example, which is one thing a lot of people complain bitterly about as well. The school is still completely destroyed, despite promises for the past 2 years that the government said they were going to set up the school, the school will start again. Nothing changed. You can still see the destruction everywhere. It still looks the same way it looked like 2 years ago when the Boko Haram militants attacked the school.
It's a fairly inaccessible place, isn't it? Is that part of the reason why the 200 girls still haven't been found?
Well, it is indeed a region that is very difficult to access, and especially very difficult also for journalists to get in there. We've been trying that for 2 years to go to Chibok, and we never got the military clearance to go there. This time we were quite lucky that it worked out, because initially the military did not allow us to enter Chibok town, but the next day the Murtala Muhammad Foundation went there, and Murtala Muhammad Foundation is run by the daughter of a former military ruler of Nigeria, and that way it was easier for us to join them and access the area. And you have to imagine the area as a war zone. It's still a lot of military presence around there. You can see also a lot of vigilante groups with their weapons who are trying to secure the area.
What do Nigerians in other parts of the country think of the Chibok abductions and how the government is handling the matter?
Well, many people here in Nigeria know that the more time is passing, the more difficult it will be to bring those girls back. And many people here think that is also quite unrealistic to think that those girls will all come back healthy after staying all this time with brutal terrorists. Definitely they will be traumatized if they will come back. But of course, also in most parts of Nigeria, there's a huge disappointment about their governance, both of the former administration of Goodluck Jonathan, who many consider as a complete failure when it comes to fighting Boko Haram. They have missed a huge chance to free those girls in the very beginning when they denied that those girls were abducted. In the first weeks, rarely anything happened. Those parents I talked to, they complained to me bitterly again that they told the military, we'll go on ourselves, we'll find those girls by ourselves if you don't want to help us. But the military decided not to let them go and look for Boko Haram. So there's still a lot of disappointment in the whole country, and a lot of disappointment also for the new administration that is in power for 1 year now and hasn't shown little results when it comes to finding those girls.
DW West Africa correspondent Adrian Krish.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Let's head to Malawi, where President Peter Mutharika has declared a state of national disaster over the prolonged drought. Mutharika has appealed for humanitarian assistance from international donors and the private sector. He said Malawi would be short of about 1 million tons of maize needed to feed the population. Malawi joins Zimbabwe, Mozambique and parts of South Africa that are experiencing the worst drought in years, made worse by the El Nino weather phenomena. George Muhango has more on the story.
In a statement to the nation, President Mutharika attributed the poor harvest of maize, Malawi's staple food, to El Nino weather phenomenon that have also been felt in other southern African countries. Mutharika also said that food insecurity will prevail and that the country will require assistance between now and 2017.
In most areas, especially in the southern region, we're receiving sporadic rains interspersed with prolonged dry spells, resulting in the drying, scorching, and permanent wilting of crops. These prolonged dry spells have resulted into severe crop failure, particularly in the southern region and parts of the central region.
With 2.8 million Malawians already facing acute food shortages, Fryson Chodzi, a Lilongwe-based social commentator, calls for policy shift in crop production to avert such calamities.
There is a need to provide an emergency relief to the people of Malawi. But paramount to that, we would want the policy shift now that the government should accept. One, we would want the coming budget for the coming year, they should focus on building commercial agriculture, which brings in farming as a business for food crop, not subsidy program. Because subsidy program has failed Malawi. We should be able to admit that the subsidy program has failed Malawi. It was meant to build on. At the onset, it was a very good program. But over the years, you cannot sustain a program that is not graduating people out of hunger.
George Kampoundi, a youth activist with a local organization, Passion for Youth Development, is not happy with the way the Minister of Agriculture handles matters to do with food security.
Production of food is one of the key areas. The Minister of Agriculture, they have to review and look at what the possible areas which they can concentrate to make sure that the country has enough food. We don't want to run into a situation where we start begging food from people.
Currently, the World Food Program is assisting at least 3 million people in Malawi, with about 23 of 28 districts badly affected.
George Mahango reporting, and we apologize for the poor sound quality. You're listening to Africa Link live from DW Studios in Bonn. Residents of the restive Darfur region in Sudan have been voting in a three-day referendum. The results will determine whether to unite the region's five states into a single entity or maintain them as they are. A united Darfur with greater autonomy has long been the demand of ethnic minority insurgents battling the Sudanese government. However, the rebel groups have boycotted the referendum, claiming it was unfair. Rosalind Marsden is an associate fellow with Chatham House in the UK and a former British ambassador to Sudan. She's been telling Mark Caldwell more about the referendum.
What I know so far is that the Darfur Referendum Commission, who's in charge of running this referendum, have announced that 3.5 million voters out of a potential pool of 4.5 million voters were registered to vote. The commission have said that 900,000 people voted on the first day of polling, and the ruling National Congress Party has predicted a large voter turnout. Eyewitnesses in Darfur have reported that they've seen few voters at some of the polling stations on the second day. So the reports coming out so far are rather contradictory.
What about the 2.5 million Darfuris who've been displaced? Have they been able to vote?
We don't know precisely how many of them were registered. There was a statement put out by the US Department of State on the 9th of April, which expressed a number of concerns about the credibility of the referendum. One of the reasons they cited, there was inadequate registration of Darfuris living in the IDP camps.
Why are the two main rebel groups, the Justice and Equality Movement and the Sudan Liberation Army, boycotting this poll?
I think the concerns are that the security conditions on the ground are not really conducive at the present time for all Darfuris to be able to cast their vote and to have confidence in a sort of free and fair poll.
Why is the government holding this referendum at this particular time?
The referendum was supposed to have been held within a year of signing. We heard nothing more about it until suddenly this January, the government announced that it was going to go ahead and have the referendum this month. One can speculate a couple of factors. One is that the government have launched their own version of a national dialogue, which has been going on since last October, and they may now be preparing for a new constitution. According to the Doha document for peace in Darfur, the outcome of the referendum is supposed to be incorporated into any permanent constitution. Well, President Bashir has just completed a tour of Darfur to campaign for the referendum, and it's very clear that his main message was that the war in Darfur is now over, apart from a few small pockets of resistance. On the back of that, he's saying that after the referendum, the IDP camps will be closed and there won't be any more need for international peacekeepers or relief agencies.
And the government, of course, wishes to preserve the status quo, the five separate states.
Yes, in their mind is that if they can keep Darfur divided into five states, this is a way of controlling it more effectively. Darfur has historically had a very strong regional identity. It was an independent sultanate for centuries until it was annexed to Sudan.
Rosalind Marsden, former British ambassador to Sudan. Let's now join the crime fighters as they bring one case to a close.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello, thanks for tuning into Crime Fighters Land of Chongwe. This is the final episode entitled Rests in Peace. Last time, Private Detective Nwere and Inspector Wamto had a strong suspicion that Zimari might be behind the murder of Chief Awombo. Meanwhile, Zimari himself was trying to convince other Chongweans that the flower company Roses International was responsible for Chief Awombo's death. Where will the story take us next? Let's pick it up with Mweri and Inspector Wamto. He's dragged her out of an internet cafe in handcuffs. Why? Mweri has sent an email to all the local media outlets contradicting the official statement that Chief Awombo was killed by a wild animal. So now, shortly before the chief's funeral, the information that he was in fact murdered is out in the open. The question is, who done it?
Drive! Drive, people, drive!
Calm down, Mwamto. It's not the end of the world. By the way, that was very mean of you, Inspector.
You really thought I was going to arrest you? Come on, Mary, I'm not such a bad cop, am I?
Well, you still haven't told me where we are going. Or is this another of your bad jokes?
We are going to Chongwe.
At this time of night? Wouldn't it be better to wait and go tomorrow morning just before Awombo's funeral?
My instinct tells me I have to go there now. You know where Zumari lives, right?
Yes, I know. Are you taking him in for questioning?
I'm not sure what I'm going to do with him. But by tomorrow morning, the whole country will know that the chief was murdered. If Zumari is responsible, I want him behind bars.
So you do approve of what I did, letting the public know that Chief Awombo was murdered?
That was what I wanted to do in the first place, but my bosses didn't say it that way. I'm actually relieved it's all out in the open now.
Djembe, hello?
Mweri, you have to do something. I've tried calling the police, but the line was bad.
Okay, Djembe, take a deep breath and tell me what's going on.
It's Zumari.
Zumari.
Zumari?
Mwamto, keep your eyes on the road. Do you want to kill us both? Sorry, Djembe. Go ahead. What about Zumari?
He's planning to attack Mr. Gamble at the directors of Roses International at Chief Awombo's funeral.
No way. Djembe, are you sure about this? Who's your source?
I am the source. Listen, all the young people in Chongwe, including me, have been given machetes. If you don't stop Zumari, there's going to be bloodshed tomorrow. I have to go. Bye.
No, wait. Don't hang up. Damn.
What's going on, Mweri?
You are right. Zumari is planning to attack the directors of Roses International during Awombo's funeral.
What?
Hurry! We don't have much time.
You sure this is Zumari's house, Mweri?
Go ahead and knock.
Maybe he's asleep already.
No, Mwamto. Try again.
Who is it? Zumari, this is Inspector Mwamto. Open the door. You're wanted in connection with the death of Chief Awombo. Drop the machete. Drop it or I'll shoot.
Is this how you repay us, Mweri? By siding with the oppressors, the land grabbers, and the tyrants?
Zumari, you didn't have to kill the chief, no matter what he had done. You shouldn't have taken the law into your hands.
Awombo deserved to die for grabbing our land and turning my family into beggars. He deserved to die for letting what little land we still had be taken away by Roses International. He deserved to die. Damn right, he deserved to die. And I'll do it all over again if I had to.
I have only one question, Zumari. What did you use to strangle the chief to death?
The chief was foolish to trust me. I told him he should walk on ahead while I tied my shoelace. He never suspected a thing. I took out my shoelace and put on my work gloves. It was all over in a moment. Then I dragged his body to the river and threw it in. The rest is history.
My
My dear citizens, as your interior minister, I join you today to remember a man who sacrificed everything for this nation. Much has been said about our dear departed Chief Awombo, and much more could be said to praise his brave and heroic deeds. It is now my pleasure to invite to the podium another unsung hero who made it possible for Chief Awombo's murderer to be arrested. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Pambo.
Yay, Pambo!
Thank you, thank you, thank you. But Your Excellency, ministers, dignitaries, I am not the hero of this story. In fact, I owe everything to Mweri. She never gave up seeking the truth in spite of all the obstacles. All I can say is, rest in peace, mighty Chief Awombo. We'll miss you and your wisdom. Thank you.
Thank you, Pambo. Ladies and gentlemen, I now invite President Imani to address you all.
Thank you. People of Chongwe, dear citizens, it was only this morning that I learned from the press that the chief wasn't killed by wild animals, but was in fact murdered. As you are all aware, Intelligence Chief Zamba Wazamba has handed in his resignation, which I have accepted. I've also been briefed that the possible motive for Chief Awombo's murder is connected with the history of this rose farm where we are now gathered. As you all know, I came to power after the land of Chongwe was leased to Roses International. I am now ordering that this lease be revoked and all such land deals in the country are to be reviewed.
Yes.
This is our country. This is our land that our forefathers fought hard for.
Yes.
We cannot and will not allow blood to flow because of land that is already ours.
Your Excellency, we need to get you out of here. Let the security agents handle this.
No, Kuzacha. I want you to go down there and find out what the problem is. That's your job.
Of course. Of course, Your Excellency.
They want to attack us.
It's all right. Everything is fine. President Imani, Minister Kuzacha, the young people are surrendering their machetes. They had planned an attack, but they have changed their minds. And now they come in peace.
Thank God.
To all those who have surrendered their weapons, I, President Imani, grant you amnesty.
Yes!
I promise that you will not be arrested or prosecuted. Yes! Now, this is how our beloved chief would have liked us to bid him farewell.
As the people of Chongwe dance and sing praising Chief Awombo, we bring down the curtains on this series. Land of Chongwe was written by Crispin Mwakideo. As always, you can listen again to this episode or to the entire series by visiting our website, dw.com/crimefighters, or on Facebook. Until we meet again for another story, goodbye and stay safe.
And don't miss the beginning of a new crime fighter story called Drugs to Cure, Drugs to Kill on Monday, right here on Africa Link. And now a reminder of our main stories. A video released by Boko Haram 2 years after the abduction of the Chibok schoolgirls appears to show some of the girls alive. Malawi has declared a state of national disaster over its prolonged drought. And residents of Darfur in Sudan have been voting in a referendum on the region's status. We do like to hear what you make of the stories we have aired. You can send a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or an SMS to country code 491609575954. 1010. And as always, more news on the continent, just visit dw.com/Africa. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Have a good day and stay safe.